Ukraine hits Russian cities with more drones, about 700 of them. Russia answers back with missiles. It's all happening, and we have the images that you should watch and know about today.
The capture of Konstantinivka by the southern group of forces opens a direct path for further advances towards Kramatorsk, Slavyansk, and other fortified areas in the Donbas. This is undoubtedly the key to liberating the entire territory of the Donetsk People's Republic.
Yeah, see, that's really, really important. Russia captures, liberates, a key city in the Donbas, which means there may not be left now to control or take in the Donbas. I'm going to be breaking all of this down for you. We're going to put a big map here, just like the one we used last week, so you can get the effect of this right here on the Sanchez effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. More than 1.5 million of you watched our reporting on expected developments in the Donbas last Thursday and Friday. It was exclusive. We were the first ones to show you exactly what was happening and what was going to be happening right in the battlefield itself. And today, there are even more huge developments on the war in Ukraine. So here's why. Over the past 24 hours or so, Ukraine at first, at the urging and assistance of most NATO countries in Europe, hit the Russian territory with some 700 drone attacks. And most were Russian civilian targets, and almost all in Russia were intercepted, right, by the defense system. Then Russia, in response, retaliated once again with an attack on Kiev and other key cities in Ukraine. And this is, like, really part of a developing story that happened outside of what you're seeing here, which is really what we would call part of the front line in the Donbas. And we're going to be breaking all of this down for you in just a little bit. But let's first go, because this is happening so fast, let's go to Russia's retaliatory strikes on Ukraine, mostly in the Kiev region. Here we go. Watch this. Yeah, the video is spectacular. I mean, look at these pictures, look at these images. I can tell you, we know the regions now that were struck, obviously the Kiev region, as well as airfields in Dnepropetrovsk, Poltava, Cherkasky, Chernohiv. Mostly airfields in those regions, by the way. Now, in the Kiev region, there were about 68 to 70 missiles that were fired. Mostly they were Iskanders. And from our understanding, they all got through. There's no defense system. And if there is one, it's not working very well in Kiev. Because as you can see, the missiles all hit. I'll tell you exactly what they were targeting. They were targeting the Abriz PT. That's a major military drone manufacturer. It was hit. Budavestnik is a producer of radio equipment that's used in UAVs. It was hit. The UKR Armotech was hit. That's an armored vehicle plant that also makes missile warheads. Kuznia na Rybalskom was also hit. That's a shipyard that produces naval drones. And then Kavan Quantum, also known as Kiev 71 by insiders. This is a manufacturer of guidance components for Ukraine's Neptune missiles, right, that come from the West. So important to know, and I think this is important as we watch these pictures, because it does look spectacular. But here's the deal. Russia has generally stayed away from hitting areas outside of the main battlefield. They do most of their fighting, and they use most of their weaponry here, not over there, right? And they do this because they don't want to hit civilians. Because of Ukraine's attacks on civilians, though, of late, as we've been reporting here to you, mostly exclusively, because the West doesn't report this, Russia is now retaliating. In other words, they've been seeing that the Europeans have been egging on the Ukrainians as much as possible to hit Russian targets. I'm talking apartment buildings, buses with a soccer team, you know, civilian buses. They've been hitting different railroad yards. And, of course, we've all seen the effect they've had on hitting oil production facilities in Russia, which is making a lot of Russians have to wait in line for their gas these days. But still, the number of civilians, by the way, killed in this attack, the one I just showed you that is taking place in Kiev, is really small. Small compared to the number of civilians that have been killed by Ukraine in Russia. Small compared by cities attacked by the United States in places like Iraq. Small compared to what happened in Belgrade when NATO bombed it. And certainly small compared to what we're seeing in Gaza by the IDF. So, yeah, a lot of the reports that I've been seeing that are coming out of the West will tell you, well, look what the Russians are doing in Kiev. But, you know, they don't put in context that the latest numbers on this, and when I first looked, it was 14. I think now it's up to like 18, maybe 20 civilians have been killed. And by the way, the definition of civilians could be people who work in a building where they made ammunition for the war. Are they civilians or are they combatants? I don't know. That's an interesting question. But again, even if it's 20, even if it's 30, obviously you don't want anybody to die. But that's a tiny number. Imagine if the Russians really wanted to use a hypersonic missile and hit an apartment building or something in kind, what the numbers would look like. So this story floating around in the West that the ruthless Russians are now hitting civilian targets in Kiev, it's just not true. Pardon me. It's just not true. It's not true. It's a lie. Again, part of the, I think what Mr. Putin calls to or refers to as the imaginary stories, the imaginary victories, the propaganda that is coming out, mostly of the West, by the way. I don't blame the Ukrainians. I blame the people who run, who do what I do, but are in the media in places like the BBC and CNN. Because they won't tell you about any time civilians in Russia are killed or targeted or attacked. Story doesn't show up on CNN. Mysteriously, it disappears from the pages of the New York Times. It's not talked about on BBC radio, right? But now Russia retaliates. Oh, huge stories. Ruthless what Russia's doing. You know, it's important just to put that in perspective. That's not to say that either side is correct to be hitting, and nobody wants the war to continue. But put things in context. Be fair, right? So what we want to do is we want to try and focus on the facts, right? What's actually happening in this war, specifically in this region right here? What just happened in Konstantinovka, which is so important, which will lead to Druzhkova and Kramatorsk and Slavyansk? What, not just what will happen, but what will happen as a result of this happening? You know, we're gonna look at this moving forward. So when we come back, here's how we're going to do it. Former U.S. officer Stanislav Krapivnik is going to join us here, and he's going to help us map this out. He's going to help us break down what this weekend's development, and there have been a lot of them, really means. All of this coming up right here on The Sanchez Effect. Don't go away. We'll be right back. It can really change in many ways, or has changed, the dynamic of this war in Ukraine as we know it. Obviously, the big news is going to be what happened right here in Konstantinivka. And the reason that's so important is because this is the entryway to the rest of these cities that you see here, which are the remainder of what is called the Donbas, which is the goal of the Russian military, to be able to take control of this entire area. And we're going to be talking about that with my friend Stas, as promised. He's here talking to us now again about this entire development. Before we get into the specifics on the map of what is happening in the Donbass and what's about to happen in the dump, which is huge. I'm not overstating this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about what just happened. So something like 700 to 800 drone attacks on Russia, and Russia has now retaliated the Ukrainian and European drone attacks on Russia. By the way, none of those seem to have gotten through.
Right.
But Russia has retaliated by hitting the Kiev region. And we were just talking about this a little while ago, but I'd like to get your reaction to that, because the West is making it sound like Russia's attacking civilians in Kiev, when in actuality, I think I saw the number of deaths so far at between 14 to 18 or 19 or something like that. If Russia really wanted to go after civilians, they could do it, right?
Oh, of course, of course. Yeah, if you look at it, there was about 420 aerial vehicles, of which 68 were missiles.
Yeah.
Zircon missiles, Iskander missiles. If Russia wanted to go after civilians, there'd be hundreds killed, if not thousands killed. So obviously they're going after strategic targets, they're going after munitions plants, they're going after that. Yeah, that's a secondary explosion. That was a facility that was manufacturing S-300 missiles.
Right.
So high explosives, fuel, that's all that extra bang that
so,
you get
so
from
these are either targets that could easily be defined as military targets, and if some of the folks who were in those buildings died, then I would consider those combatants.
Well, they're workers. They're factory workers that know what they're manufacturing. And not
if you're
people.
Making a drone to be used by the military, you're at least a quasi-combatant, no?
True.
You're not a little old lady sitting in an apartment building getting hit by a drone, as has happened in Moscow.
Right. Right. Then there's the issue that the Ukrainians are continuing to put their anti-aircraft systems in the middle of schoolyards, by hospitals, and so on, because sooner or later that point is going to get hit. There's going to be buildings damaged by the blast wave.
No.
And they can scream,
and,
oh,
and by the way, I feel terrible if 18, 20, 22, 14, whatever the number is, I feel terrible for each one of those persons if they died. They don't deserve to die because, unfortunately, that's one of the things that happens during the war. But don't tell me that Russia's committing this horrible atrocity, you know, a Dresden-type attack, or and then you tell me that there are 18 people killed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, one hypersonic missile that Russia would use on an apartment building if they wanted to, hopefully they don't ever, doesn't ever come to this, but they could take out 5, 10,000 people with one missile, right?
Or we've seen the Israelis do that with one 2,000-pound bomb.
That's okay.
They hit it at the base, the whole building comes down. We've seen it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So, yes, if Russia wanted it, they could do that. They don't want to do that.
Right.
The Israelis do that. The U.S. military did that in Mosul when they liberated Mosul.
Yeah, and I just wanted to be clear about that, and I'm glad I had your opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the way I see it as well. At least that's my analysis, and I thought that might be your analysis as well. Thanks for taking us through that. Now, let's go to what is the most important part. This is it right here. Konstantinovka is huge because the Russians say, we have liberated this. And by the way, we have the proof. And here it is. Look at the flag waving that's taking place right now. These are videos that have been released. And I was surprised when I watched this because I thought, okay, they're going to get one guy and have him wave the flag like they... No, there's about 20 or 30 guys all over the... They literally went to different parts of the city to prove that, in fact, they have staked their claim on this city. How big is this? Talk about this.
Well, you know, first of all, Konstantinovka is one of the biggest towns Russia has taken since Mariupol.
Yeah.
To begin with. The West is in total denial. Beginning of last week, Reuters said the Russian troops are pulling up to Konstantinovka.
We reported this on Thursday and Friday.
Right.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, 3 weeks ago, the Ukrainians were vexing romantically that we may have to leave Mirograd, you know, that they lost 7 months ago.
Yeah.
So the news to the West is at least half a year behind reality. That's how they're trying to slow down reality. But this, Konstantinovka and Krasny Liman, which is basically taken, it's a cleanup operation right now in most of the city.
And by the way, just for the sake of our viewers, you see the part in red right there, or pink, or whatever the hell you want to call this color. That means that this is now controlled by Russia. Everything you see inside those red lines means it's controlled by Russia. These three are not yet controlled by Russia. Continue.
Right. So this... This is the last of the big fortifications that Ukraine's been preparing for since 2014,
right,
when the whole internal civil conflict started. They've been pouring thousands upon thousands of tons of rebarbed concrete, making elevators, reinforcing buildings to make a fortress.
Right.
So these are the last fortresses. Down here, these fortresses have all been taken, and up top, no fortress taken. This is it. Past here is open fields, small villages, and very loose logistics.
Which is why this particular city is so important, because it's the entry point to the rest of this area. In fact, there's a guy named Vladimir Putin who just said those very things.
Right.
Here's Mr. Putin. He met with his commanders over the weekend, full uniform. I'm such a nerd. I watched this thing like three times. A little boring, but it was actually fascinating to hear what the boss thinks,
right,
you know?
Right.
So here is Russia's boss, President Putin, talking about why Konstantinovka matters so much. Here it is.
The capture of Konstantinovka by the Southern Group of Forces opens a direct path for further advances towards Kramatorsk, Slavyansk, and other fortified areas in the Donbas. This is undoubtedly the key to liberating the entire territory of the Donetsk People's Republic.
He said it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And when he says, you're going to take us through this because you know this a lot better than I am. But when he says that, what he says is this opens the path to Druzhkovka, to Kramatorsk, to Slavyansk. And because that's where the defense line is set up by the Ukrainians, it really takes them all the way out here to the end of what is, you know, the Donetsk Oblast, right?
Right. Yeah. And what it also gives you is what they're not really talked that much about. So you've got Dobropolye, DNR over here, and there's a second line that's being pushed up this way from this bulge. What that's going to do is, so you've got Russian forces coming in a pincer movement from Krasny Liman and Konstantinovka coming up to take these three cities. You got Russian forces moving in from the east. The Russian reconnaissance and sabotage units are already in the city limits of all of these. They go out 5-10 kilometers out. But now you're having a double envelopment coming up because you've got this bulge coming up that's going to be cutting off the logistics that are coming in.
Back up a little bit so viewers can see what you're talking
about.
So right there. You see all the pink area here? So eventually that pink will meet up with that pink up there around Liman, right? And this whole area will be...
You're cutting off the logistics because over here is open fields.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a thin line of defensive works that, I mean, heavily fortified, but they're thin line defensive works. And back here, somebody's got to bring in supplies. And that leaves a big open area with fields, roads, all on a piece of paper that you can see because you've got satellites, you've got aviation reconnaissance, you've got drone reconnaissance. Anything coming in here, that's going to get free access to drones.
Two questions.
From the Russian side.
Two questions for you. First of all, how close are the Russians from taking these three key cities, which are the next in the building blocks toward owning Donetsk?
That's hard to say because it's combat. It's hard to say how long. Hard morale lasts. The thing is for the Ukrainians, though.
But you told me earlier they were like knocking on the door.
Yes, they are knocking on the door. But there's going to be a lot of house-to-house fighting still. The question is here the morale of the Ukrainians, because the problem for the Ukrainians is once these are taken, there's no place for them to fall back except open fields. So how long will their morale hold? Will they stand to the last or will they start running? That's questionable. That's something that we have to live and see.
So, as we would say in America, there ain't nothing here to stop the Russian army once they get past those three points.
Small villages, river barriers, that's at best, and not major rivers. So, yes, pretty much so. And the Ukrainians know that behind them, there's no positions for them to really fall back to. So either they leave or they stay in place and die.
Let me tell you about...
Or surrender.
Let me tell you, by the way, about why this is happening. Because in many ways, as I watched Mr. Putin this weekend with his commanders, he explained what really is going on as far as he sees it. Ukraine is the enemy. He says this is what the enemy, and it's not just Ukraine. He's also talking about the Europeans and the NATO forces who are behind Ukraine. He says this is their MO. This is what they're doing. This one is called Putin Imaginary Results. Take that, Gene, if you have that. I want you to listen to this.
As for the enemy's alleged battlefield successes, we must bear in mind that, to bolster their fabricated narratives and deceitful claims, the enemy may carry out acts of sabotage and terrorism, or launch forays with limited forces, but accompanied by great propagandistic fanfare, all in an effort to substantiate their assertions regarding these supposed achievements.
These supposed achievements,
right.
Propagandistic fanfare. He's sending a very specific message about these drone attacks that are hitting apartment buildings in Moscow and knocking out oil depots and hitting school buses and hitting civilian targets, et cetera. And I think the point he's making is that's not war.
No, that's not war. It's terrorism. It's a lot of terrorism. In fact, the Palantir drones, they're basically first 80% of their charge, they're looking for something that looks like a military vehicle. Last 20% of their charge, they're looking for anything that moves, civilians. That's terrorism. That's not war. But that's what the Ukrainian side and their backers are pushing.
Yeah, and when you say they're backers, I got to show you something. There's this soundbite that I saw over the weekend that's going to piss you off. Pardon me for using that kind of language on television. I apologize, but this is crazy. This guy is a British lord, and he's trying to tell the British people that they need to give up more of their money to defense, even if it means them having to suffer and their welfare and everything else. In fact, that's exactly what he says. But look at how he phrases this. Mm-hmm. You know, you're Russian, so this is going to make you angry. Take a listen to this guy. He's some lord in the UK. Play this.
Things like welfare, they are unimportant when you lose a war and you have Russian Chechen stormtroopers coming down the street raping women and killing people. I mean, that's how important defense and security is.
Telling people you got to give more money for defense because the Russian stormtroopers, interesting choice of words, are coming to rape our women.
Which, by the way, those lords, a lot of them, are the primary clients for all the grooming gangs that they refuse to review, that are literally raping the children,
the little girls.
So-called
Epstein
in the
class or
the
whatever.
Epstein class, that's
but
right.
But what do you mean? I mean, the Russians defeated the stormtroopers.
They did.
How can you call Russians stormtroopers?
Well, they're intermixing every trope they know. Putin's the new Hitler, Russians are the new stormtroopers. Anything to say to keep the people from asking, why are we so poor, and why are you giving away all the money to Ukraine, and why are you taking kickbacks?
So here's how Mr. Putin, interestingly enough, responded to that. Now, you would think that somebody would take the bait, right?
Right.
Everybody's asking, including here in Russia. You've heard people say, Putin's weak. He's not answering. He's not doing enough. He needs to be hitting him harder. You know, we need to nuke him or whatever. You know how people, you know. And I can understand why they're mad. People are waiting in lines to get gasoline. People are watching buildings getting hit with drones. So Russians are angry. Putin, instead of saying, okay, fine, I'm going to hit them too, we're going to do what they're doing, says, no, this is the battlefield. Wars are won on the battlefield.
Yep.
They're not won with propaganda. They're not run with, trickery.
Mm-hmm.
They're won on the battlefield. So here's what he says to that. Here's Putin talking about winning on the battlefield. Take a listen.
The extravagant claims of successes by the Kiev regime's leaders, which we know in reality don't exist, are, in principle, to our advantage. Since these are actors who don't truly know or were ever taught anything else, they undoubtedly disorganize both themselves and their sponsors with their actions and statements. I repeat, this is to our advantage, and the commanders of the Russian armed forces must act rhythmically, rationally, and consistently to overcome the difficulties inherent in these conditions, doing everything necessary and possible to preserve the lives of our soldiers and ensure the unconditional fulfillment of their tasks in strict accordance with the plan of the special military operation developed by the General Staff of the Russian Armed Forces.
If you listen carefully to what he's saying, and I played that back about four or five times just to make sure I was capturing the words, because it's written, I mean, these Russians are very careful about their language.
Yeah.
It's not like Trump, where he just gets out there and he starts bloviating. I mean...
And he does that very well.
He does. what Mr. Putin is saying is, we are going to stay the course. We are going to stay the course. What's your reaction to that?
Well, look, the battlefield's the only place. You can't. The West has proven negotiable and capable. You can't negotiate with people that then turn around and stab you in the back every time. Yeah. We've seen that. We've seen that in this conflict. We've seen this
Alaska.
Minsk 1, Minsk 2, Alaska. Yeah. We've seen this with Iran. We see this with Iran all the time.
Yeah.
These are the same people negotiating. So who are you going to negotiate with? Once you've done the battlefield, once you're standing on the ground, they can't make things up. Well, they can try, but the facts on the ground are the facts on the ground. So, yes, this is going to get finished on the battlefield. They've chosen this.
And the plan, I know you're not the commander in charge, but you would be good. You look the part anyway.
Thank you.
Is you got to take Konstantinovka. Then you're, Mr. Putin said, yep. Druzhkovka is next, or seemed to intimate that. Then Kramatorsk, and then obviously from the top you'll get Slavyansk, and that's it.
Yep.
And then after that, I almost fell over. I almost got. And then after that, you basically take it all the way to the end of Donetsk, and then you could say we've accomplished what we wanted. We've got the Donbass, except there's more though, right?
Right.
Because you still got to talk about, and I think I've got another map that I want to show you now. Because there's Zaporizhia and Donetsk, which are the other two oblasts, which are below this one, right?
Right.
Can we get that map so Stas can talk about that? Let's put the map of
Zaporizhia.
Okay, there you go. Take us through, just so people know, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I got this from Google. So Google says that of these two oblasts, the Russians already control 80% of it. There's another 20% to go.
Well,
is that right?
Zaporizhia is, it's, Zaporizhia runs about like this, right there. There's Zaporizhia.
Right.
So there's a lot of Zaporizhia still to take. So it's about 50%.
50%?
Yeah, it's about
50%. You mean the city or the oblast?
The oblast included. All this gray area is Zaporizhia.
Okay. Google was wrong.
Google's wrong. Russia's got the southern and eastern half of Zaporizhia, and now you've got to move up to take the rest. But the key thing here is Oryokhov, that's the last fortified major town in Zaporizhia up to Zaporizhia City.
Mm-hmm.
The Oryokhov is being enveloped from three directions. So Malatakmak is just to the southeast of Zaporizhia.
Right.
That's invested right now. There's fighting there. Russian forces from the west are coming up. They're about 6-7 kilometers out. And over here from Gulyaypolye, we see Gulyaypolye Russia took back at the end of the year.
Right.
The Ukrainians launched counteroffensives. They got defeated, and they've steamrolled up, and they are now about 6 kilometers away from here. The point, too, is Oryokhov is basically cut off because you got N08. That's the main interstate running up here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's within strike range of both artillery and drones. So both drones and artillery could take out anything that's moving up and down this roadway. So the city is basically cut off, logistic-wise, bringing in reinforcements and so on. So it's just a matter of time before these two pinchers close all the way around.
So it's just a matter of time means you're confident that the Russian military will, in fact, capture this oblast as well.
Absolutely. This once Oryokhov is done, again, Zaporizhia City is right here. Zaporizhia City has three bridges. They were hit once already. And they've got two interstates coming in. It's easy to cut off. And you can't swim across that part of the Dnieper because there's cliffs on either side.
So, well, let me ask you this then. Let's go back to the other map, if we can, Gene. Let's go back to the map of what Mr. Putin called the end of the Konstantinovka, Slavyansk, Kramatorsk, and Druzhkovka. Oh, there it is. Good. So am I to imagine then, again, my limited military knowledge, I'm not a military analyst, is that the Ukrainians, once they make the realization that they've lost this oblast, they take all of these troops and they send them down to the other region, the other oblast.
They could
to Zaporizhia, and say let's put all our defenses there now. And would that mean that this would prolong this war before there can be a truce or a deal?
More than likely, they'll send them up to Kharkov to try to hold Kharkov, because there's an offensive coming in to take Kharkov right now, too. And Kharkov, the reason Kharkov has to be taken is you've got Kharkov and Belgorod are 40 kilometers apart.
Right.
It's a day's walk, realistically speaking, if you walk fast enough. The Ukrainians are using Checkmate Vampires, which are multiple launch rocket systems, to shoot rockets from the center of Kharkiv into the center of Belgrade.
Huh.
So they're hitting civilian targets. There's been a lot of effort to destroy those vampires with drones and other things, and they hide them in civilian infrastructure, obviously. So Kharkiv has to be taken as part of that buffer to defend the Russian territory.
That's going to be a buffer. It's not part of the special military operation original plan.
Right.
It's just that they've now realized they have to have a region outside of their region, like a no man's land or whatever, the zone or whatever it's called, so that they can control that area.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's going to be part of that region. So more than likely, they're going to start moving troops northwest to Kharkiv. That is, if anybody gets out of this. Because again, if you look at this, from here to here is mostly open territory, some forested areas, fields, lots of fields. So once they start retreating, they're going over open fields and open areas. And more likely, if they start retreating too late, say around late September, early October, we're looking at the rainy season. All of this turns to mud. Good luck trying to get out.
Yeah.
So if they wait long enough, they're going to be stuck there. There's going to be a lot of units that are going to be destroyed.
Could these three towns, the next big three here, Druzhkovka, Kramatorsk, and Slavyansk, be captured within, say, the next couple of months?
It could.
As some are indicating it will?
It could, possibly.
You were just in the Donbass.
Yes.
What are your sources saying?
The push is going to be on. It's always hard to tell because they are very fortified. It all comes down to the morale of the Ukrainian army. You know, human morale is very hard to tell because some units will stand that should be running, some units will run that should be standing. It's how morale breaks. And how it holds. In this case, for them, what could be a big breaking point is the fact that there's nothing behind. You see, everywhere over here, whenever they got pushed out, there's always the next town over they could retreat to. And then the next town
You run out of towns.
You run out of towns. You've got a bunch of unfortified villages and a lot of fields.
I got to talk about something else now, because there's something else that's happening here that's making this. I had a conversation the other day with someone in, I think he was in New York, who was breaking this down for me as well. And he said the big problem for the Russian army are the drones. They just annihilate you with a bunch of drones. And the British, this Lord guy, wants to send more drones.
Yes.
So they keep doing this. So Mr. Putin called on his commander. This is in Sumy. Before we talk about this, let me see if I can put the map up. Can you give me the map that shows Sumy? I think we have one. I was talking with the producing staff a little bit earlier, and I think we've got something. Show me Sumy. So Kursk and Sumy. There it is. There's the Sumy region, as a matter of fact. So Russia is still trying to hold this, because this, too, as you can see, that's the Russia-controlled area there in the pink. This, too, is kind of a buffer that they're creating. But they admit, in fact, I'm going to play this for you now. This is a commander, the commander in charge of this area. Mr. Putin, during this meeting, called on all the different commanders from all the different areas, and he asked them for their report. And when this guy filed his report, I caught this. Listen to what he says about the volatility, about how difficult it is to be able to deal with these drones, in his words. Take a listen, Stas. Here it is.
The task of preventing Ukrainian drones from flying deep into Russian territory has not yet been fully resolved. To ensure the timely detection and destruction of enemy aerial targets along their flight paths, as well as the destruction of drone crews, we are expanding our reconnaissance and firepower systems. As part of the expansion of the security zone, the army group near Kursk is advancing in the general direction of Sumy.
So they're moving troops toward Sumy, and they're using this buffer zone. Tell me if what I heard is what I think I heard. They're creating new special equipment and hardware that they will use to try and stop the Ukrainians from firing those drones into, you know, the motherland, so to speak, right?
Well, we've got two types of drones here as an issue. We've got the airplane-type drones that they've flown up to Moscow and other cities.
Right.
Those are being launched now, by the way, from light trucks, gazelles. So they get a box, they open up, they launch two drones, they drive away. But they're usually running on gasoline or they're running on diesel. Mm-hmm. And that's what Russia's destroyed 600 fueling stations up and down this border zone, because it's hard to find the truck that they park in some garage, but if they can't refuel, That makes life a lot harder for him. Sumy, by the way, so Russian forces, because you can't see the edge of Sumy, it goes up a bit. Russian forces are about 5.5 kilometers outside of Sumy. Mm-hmm. They've broken through the second line of defense. Mm-hmm. And you can see Sumy, it's a forested area right up to Sumy, so they can get through the forested area.
Right.
Drones can't see them. Drones and branches aren't friends to begin with. Drones over greenery, they can't see the greenery. So you've got a much better chance of being able to infiltrate through. And the key thing, too, about Sumy is a logistic hub. If you look at all these red lines coming in, including the red line that goes up to Suzdal, that the Ukrainian army and the NATO mercs have committed mass murder in, that area in Kursk, the Kursk incursion, and the lines then going down to Kharkiv. Sumy is a key logistical hub. You take that hub, you cut off a very large chunk of the front, and this leads all the way back up to Kyiv. Chernihiv and on to Kyiv. All of these, see the right here? The main interstates that come up from Kyiv, they go straight to Sumy, and then they go down to Kharkiv.
Yeah.
So cut that, and you cut that big chunk of logistics off.
So the takeaway is, as we get ready to wrap this segment up, and as usual, you've been so perfectly explicative at being able to take us through this. One, the Russians aren't playing that propaganda game. They're not interested. Yes, they're going to fire like they did last night at Kyiv and whoever tries to hit Russian civilian targets, but they're not going to take their eye off the prize, and the eye off the prize is the battlefield.
Right.
What's happening on the battlefield? We're going to win the war on the battlefield, like our coaches used to say in football or basketball. You win on the court. You win on the field. You don't win by calling your opponent's names. You show up and you outplay them.
Right.
And that's kind of what the Russians are saying they're going to do. Mm-hmm. How close are they, given what we learned this weekend? How big was this development this weekend in Konstantinivka?
It's a big development that it opens up the rest of the Donbass area, that area that to final Russian move through. How close are we to peace? I can't say. The problem with that is on the geopolitical side, the government in Kyiv, they don't care about how many people their people die.
Yeah.
They're there to make money. They're there to leave when it gets done.
But you know, Stas, If Russia can literally liberate, control, whatever verb you want to use.
I prefer liberate.
These four oblasts, well, I'm a journalist. But if they can control these four oblasts, the message to the Europeans, to NATO, to the EU, to Mr. Trump is, hey, they did what they were going to do. It's too late, Mr. Zelensky. You can't have that land back. You've lost it. Time to sit down and do a deal. Don't you think? The political pressure will be to deal?
You would think, but then again, you've got people who are making money, the Europeans. You got people who are making money, Zelensky.
Yeah.
And as long as they've got cannon fodder, they're going to say, look, the Germans are talking about sending back 360,000 Ukrainian men to surely be sent to their deaths.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is the Europeans we're dealing with.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We will hope that common sense prevails, because you would think once somebody has captured a territory, the territory is, quote, captured. Katie by the door, too late. You can't turn that back.
Yep.
But sometimes common sense is not what people respond to. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
You're so good. I always appreciate you coming and taking
It's always a pleasure.
You know, and you're so good at explaining this stuff. So thank you so much for being with us. You know, we really think it's important. We saw this last week as a turning point in this war, and we reported it to you. Over the weekend, something like 1.5 million to 2 million people watched that episode. And we thank you for being there. It makes, you know, it's important for us to try and bring you the developments as they happen and provide the analysis with people like Stas, for example, so that we can give you the proper guidance to understand this complicated and complex situation. You can catch us, obviously, on X, as well as on YouTube, on BitChute, and on Spotify. We're in all of these places. And please, comment. Tell us what you think we got right. Tell us what you think we got wrong. We're all for that here. Most importantly, thanks so much for letting us into your homes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you again next time.